Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, welcome to Nature Now. We are greeted by a cool, showery spring around us. Not just showery, but flowery. This is Mary Robson, and I think it's a grand time to walk and look at gardens and all the forest green growing around us. Today we'll explore poetry and nature with Denise Banker, a poet and our guide to spring. April is Poetry Month. Every month is Poetry Month, but April is especially Poetry Month, and we can recall a line from Keats, who wrote, "The poetry of earth is never dead." And now for our mystery sound. This is a bird, I'm giving you that much, and it is a bird we often think of as quiet. And we are going to look at some observations. Thank you, Charlie Fleischman, for helping us get these on the air.
From Dennis Paulson, quote, "About 500 horned grebes in a flock in Mystery Bay on Marrowstone Island, Jefferson County. That is far more horned grebes than I have ever seen in a single day, much less in a single flock. Most were in full breeding plumage. The flock was linear, spread out over several hundred yards, and we both thought that number was a minimum. As many birds were diving as we scanned the flock back and forth. I don't have any idea why there were so many. Perhaps a staging area. The breeding plumage has a brilliant gold fluff of head feathers that stand out to the sides, appearing like horns, especially if you see them at the correct angle. A male and female mountain bluebird at Fort Worden State Park, Jefferson County, foraging among driftwood on the beach. Quite a pleasant thing to see at a spot where there were virtually no seabirds other than glaucous-winged gulls." This is from Dennis Paulson.
Mountain bluebirds are blue overall, the male bright blue on the back and lighter blue underneath. They nest in tree cavities and nest boxes when available. They have declined over the past two decades but are not considered endangered. It is always a thrill to see them. And we did some quoting from Dennis Paulson. For more of his work, check the Slater Museum of Natural History in Tacoma. He is the director emeritus there and a superb writer. Finally, I am beginning to see Trillium ovatum. Trillium, the showiest flower of the western coastal spring forest, is emerging now. They choose rich soil, often under Douglas fir, with the summer moisture and shade they need. They're in leaf now, with a three-petaled white flower still in bud, but in protected or warmer sites, they're opening. Sometimes they're called wake robin in the eastern U.S., but they stay here underground when the robins are here year-round. They're wake robin after the robins get here. Ants move the seeds, which bear a sticky and apparently delicious structure called an elaeosum. Ants moving plant parts, which happens quite commonly, is called myrmecocotyry. The plants also spread slowly by rhizomes. Leave the flowers on the plant to help it stay healthy. Also, the rhizomes cannot stand drying out. If transplanting from a friend's garden, keep them covered and plant immediately. From seed to flowering takes 5 to 7 years, and one person projected 10 years. Look around the shores and trails of Gibbs Lake for Trillium ovatum. That's one of the places I like most to see them. We are celebrating spring and Poetry Month with Denise Banker. For her background, she's an educator all her life, a poet naturalist, and now she coordinates the Chimicum Drug and Alcohol Prevention Coalition in the Chimicum School District. Her poems in the book Swimming the Colorado depict being, that is, the being of all of us, integrating human and non-human nature, and vividly suggesting the earth is living and humans aren't separate from it. She received a doctoral degree in creative writing with a critical emphasis in environmental literary criticism. Her work has appeared in many periodicals and anthologies. A native of Nebraska, she taught English and creative writing at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and Concordia University. So we are just going to leap in. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Mary.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We are going to explore as much as we can human unity with the earth. This is not something that people have never thought about, but it's kind of wonderful to put it all in one place on this beautiful flowery spring week.
Yeah, and it is nice out today.
Isn't it? Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous.
We're recording this on Monday when the sun came out. You may want to remember that. So I would like you to please start with a poem, and you told me about your poem for Scythia, so let's jump into it.
Okay, well, I don't think this poem needs any explanation. It's just a short piece. For Scythia. Tucked into the corner of the yard in my jacket of yellow, oak leaf belt cinched about my waist, skirt of old snow fraying at the hem, my roots anchored in their dark galoshes, I set out to become my own bush of sun yellow flowers.
That's a beautiful image. This is the observer melding with the bush. And so, let's think about some of the specifics. You mentioned the earth is living and humans aren't separate from it. Not everybody has that opinion. So I was wondering if you could specify a little bit when you started talking to yourself about the earth is alive.
Well, I guess it was when I was in grade school, actually. We had a teacher who would explain to us in our science class that the earth was a rock. And I always thought that was very, very odd, thinking about the earth as a rock. I knew instinctively that the earth was animate. It wasn't at all what a school child would understand a rock to be. And so then I was interested, and I started looking in the dictionary at animate and inanimate. And, of course, inanimate is not having the qualities associated with active living organisms. Inanimate is also not animate or energetic. It's dull. And I thought, okay, well, the earth, that isn't the earth that I know, right?
So it's certainly active and living, right?
Yeah.
I think that the communicating with small children is probably more direct and correct than it used to be. That sounds like an old-fashioned way to describe the earth. It's a rock.
Yeah. I had an older science teacher in a writing group I was in one time, too, who used to raise her eyebrows every time I would talk about the earth as a living organism. And she'd say, Denise, the earth is a rock. And I always thought,
another rock.
Yeah. It was, I don't know what you're talking about, Rosemary, but the earth is not a rock that someone would pick up off the beach and throw through your window.
No, it's wildly connected.
Yes.
You said you wanted to quote a little Wordsworth.
For my PhD, I delved into the English Romantic poets, and Wordsworth's Prelude was one of my favorite books, so I studied that quite a bit. And at one part of the Prelude, I'm not thinking of which exact book it is, but Wordsworth says, and I'm going to quote this, "Hence genius, born to thrive by interchange of peace and excitation, finds her his best and purest friend. From her receives that energy by which he seeks the truth. From her that happy stillness of mind, which fits him to receive it when unsought." All of Wordsworth's dated pronouns aside, that's the kind of rock the earth is to me. The earth and the humans aren't some alien life form on it.
And in a sense, he's saying that from nature you get both the calmness to observe and the energy to act.
Yeah, and it's unsought.
Right.
It just comes to you.
Just to get a little bit of your background, I'm always interested in how people who love nature started out experiencing it. And yours was in Nebraska?
I kind of spent my whole life outside, but something that was really important to me was when I was a fourth grader, I read this book called A Summer Sleigh Ride, and it's by this woman named Betty Kay Irwin. And the book is these four young girls who are best friends. They have all of their after school adventures and tree houses involved, etc. And one of the little girls disappears, and the other three solve the mystery, right? She's been kidnapped and they solve the mystery. But the thing that was so intriguing to me was how the natural world, the non-human world, played a role in the book. It wasn't just a backdrop that the human story was being played out on.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like a stage set then.
Yeah, at all. And that really intrigued me. And for my whole life, I've been poking around at farmers markets and roaming around in greenhouses while my mom and dad picked out plants for our floral shop, walking to and from the swimming pool, poking my big toe in the tar in the street. And we were always outside. We picnicked, we hiked, we camped, we skated, we spent hours on the sledding hill. As an adult with my own children, we explored eastern Nebraska's Blue River, which ran through our town. And there was also a creek that was a tributary off of it called Plum Creek. I have kind of a sweet little poem about that. And we marveled at the fireflies winking in the early summer's darkened woods. It was really a beautiful experience growing up.
It's a wonderful way to
raising my children. Yeah.
What I'd like to do just briefly is describe your current work. You said once the brain is a kind of wealth. So if we're told to plan for and save for the future, that must include taking care of our body, which houses our brains. Could you explain a little more of what you do and how this relates to your feeling about nature?
Well, about 4 years ago or so, I started working for Jefferson County Public Health, and in the process of that work, I was promoted to a position that was more suited with education. I became Chimicum Drug and Alcohol Coalition Prevention Coordinator. As I started to study that, I began to think about this idea of how focused we are on putting aside money for the future, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's not the only thing that you should be concentrating on. And a way to talk to kids about drug and alcohol prevention is to kind of explain to them the brain science around it. It's not like just don't do that or try to scare them. As an adult person talking to wise and understanding youth who are intelligent and want to participate, you talk to them about their brains because they're interested in that. And so if we start smoking pot in eighth grade and start binge drinking by 10th grade, we're hurting our brains, and it's while they're still developing, and the science tells us that. So in that way, we're not really saving for the future, because we're going to need that brain.
You're cutting your future off, actually.
That's right. You really kind of are. And so we all know how drinking and smoking pot affects our school performance and mental functioning and our brain cells and our social life, et cetera. So all that combined suggests we're not really saving for the future. And so that's kind of how I try to approach it.
And that's interesting, because what you're not doing is scaring somebody. What you're saying is you possess a beautiful resource and you need to take care of it. And that's a completely different approach.
Yeah, you get to make the choice to take care of it, right? Someone has been generous enough and thoughtful enough to supply you with the sort of thinking about it and to say, you think about this. This is your choice. Mm-hmm. This is what it does.
So given the importance of that and what your education is taking you to in young people, how does this relate to studying nature? Because that's kind of where we are in our celebration today.
So one way to begin saving your brain for the future, or nurturing your brain, right, is to find healthy ways to recreate and healthy ways to reduce your own anxiety and stress. Because we live in an ultra-competitive, technologically advanced culture, and it's becoming increasingly economically stratified. So that's a pressure, too. So spending more time outside, in the woods, on the beach, in the mountains, those are ways to cut down on stress, and they're also healthy ways to recreate. And this doesn't mean you have to have some kind of expensive ski trips or exotic vacations and so on. It means hiking and biking on the Larry Scott Trail, or walking along Glass Beach, or going to the beach at Old Fort Worden or something, or canoeing in Gibbs Lake, something like that.
So these are things that are available to all of us that live here. And I was thinking about the fact that a lot of us came because we wanted to be surrounded by what we see here in the natural world. And how do you find new experiences on familiar trails? Let's say you ride your bike back and forth on the Larry Scott Trail, 14 miles round trip, regularly. How does that stay fresh for you?
For me, when I ride my bike on the way there, I see things, and on the way back, I see different things. Mm-hmm. You're seeing them from a different perspective. You've gotten on the trail, you're riding along, you're trying to stop worrying about everything you're worrying about. Do those people like me? Grousing about who said what when and mm-hmm. why you didn't respond the way you thought you should respond. All of those things that go through our minds constantly, like you're writing that off and you're noticing pretty soon the detritus in the woods, you're noticing the wind coming through the trees, you're noticing little groupings of trees. The alders seem to like to grow in groups of three. You start noticing the bird sounds, and uh-huh. your body is propelling you through the woods. That increases your endorphins. I mean, right? We all know right. this. That increases your endorphins. You feel better.
And one of the notes that you have here is the patchwork sky above, which I really like because the way this area works, the clouds come and go at different times. We have a blue sky at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and a gray sky at 6, and it just flows. So you're getting a chance to experience
it's beautiful.
All that.
You know, the Japanese have this practice known as forest bathing, and it's actually been scientifically proven to lower heart rate and blood pressure and reduce stress. And what it is just walking slowly through the woods and just being with the trees.
You don't have a destination.
No, not particularly. Mm-hmm. And you're not counting your steps on your Fitbit. You're just kind of in the woods, letting everything fall away because the trees and all the oxygen. And it's not that it just makes you feel fresher and better. Mm-hmm. According to the National Institute of Health, actually, it improves your immune system function.
Wow. Tell me a little bit more about some of the things you've seen on Larry Scott and Katai, and then we'll conclude with one more poem.
Okay, well, I ride my bike every day to work and back, and so I ride through the Katai Park. All winter long, I've seen amazing American coots, just like in these little flotillas. They're very sweet. Now I've seen northern shovelers, Eurasian and American widgeons, buffleheads, of course, mallards and geese. Mm-hmm. I see herons all the time. This morning I saw three herons, and you usually don't see herons together. I've seen trumpeter swans out behind the Chimicum High School. And then down on the beach, I've seen oyster catchers, and you always see herons down there too, and kingfishers and eagles. And I've noticed that the Swainson's thrush is back in the woods.
Oh.
And the little trillium are sort of starting to come up, and the rhododendrons are mm-hmm. budding. It's just so cool in the spring also to see how the deciduous trees, like the alders, begin to appear furry just before they turn to that pale green, just before they're in their full flush of summer. It's crazy. I love that. And then also how the cedars and the junipers cast that smoky pollen into the air. And mm-hmm. I also love being able to see the wind as it approaches. But I'll tell you what, nothing beats the sight of sunlight or moonlight threading through a forest canopy.
That really sounds like a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And will you conclude with a poem? We would like to hear another one.
I'll read one called Pastoral. It's just a little sweet dip in the pond. This is actually a place called Pawnee Lake, and it's in Nebraska. Pastoral. Lakes pleated water, shore fringed in green, clouds like heron breeze. We sit on a bench, the sun pitched at an angle to the right. Something frightens two geese who, in their barking, call up a float of pintail ducks. The whisk of hinged wingbeat crosses the lake and triggers a blue heron, who slips out of the woods, quiet and alone, pumps one solid whoosh to lift itself along the tree line. The ducks circle back, settle in the water, drift toward the shore, bob and dive. Each time one plunges under, I gather breath as if to swim among them.
That's beautiful. That gets us to the sort of reminiscence and reminder of the healing qualities of being in this world.
So. Absolutely. And you know, the truth is you can just put on your shoes, your coat, and your hat and walk out the door here.
Yep. Nobody has an umbrella in the Olympic Peninsula. You
That's
don't.
Right.
You just kind
you
of
just
jump in
out.
There and go, right? Thank you so much, Denise, for being here, not just living here, but being part of the natural world around us. I'm
Thanks
very
so
grateful
much, Mary.
And grateful for the poems. Thank you.
Yep. Thank
Those
you.
Are from the book called Swimming the Colorado by Denise Banker. Mystery sound. This is a rufous hummingbird. I know we have said a lot about hummingbirds this year, but this particular hummingbird gang just returned from Mexico. And if you weighed just about as much as a nickel, would you migrate? The round trip migration for the rufous hummingbird is 8,000 miles, beating your wings. Once settled after migration, the male faces the light and flashes a brilliant neck color. This does not show when he's in shade. He positions himself to get noticed. They are feisty and noisy when attracting mates. They also fly up to 50 feet straight up and come straight down, ending by making the sound I think of as can, or choo, choo. So wouldn't you like to have a gorget to flash? The bird neck feature is named after the part of a medieval armor that protected the throat. Humans have to get tattoos or wrap themselves in colored clothing. Birds simply change their feather colors when breeding. And now for some events.
BirdFest is April 11th through 13th. The Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society, after months of planning, it's finally here. Tours, classes, photography, fellowship. Check the OPAS for details. Land Trust Internship. Land Trust seeks applicants for a 3-month paid community conservation intern position. It's a great opportunity to get job experience in environmental conservation work while making a real on-the-ground difference in our community. Applications are due by April 18th.
Linda Landkammer from the Native Plant Society announces, our plant study group will begin this year on April 11th at 12:30 at the Native Plant Garden, Kulkahan Garden. They will do this every second Wednesday until October. And she says we'll spend 1 hour and 15 minutes reviewing a short list of native species and their attributes. If you are interested, just show up at the garden on second Wednesdays at 12:30. And one more on plants. Thursday, April 19th, a native plant study tour of the Thaler Wetlands and Oak Patch Natural Area Preserve. Meet at the Thaler Wetlands parking lot, 10 a.m., just south of Belfair. And you can get more information from the Olympic Peninsula Native Plant Society. That's for April 19th. And we hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic, live, and eclectic reports. Thanks to Charlie Fleischman for engineering our words and our sounds. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ, Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Podcasts are also available on the website at www.kptz.org, and the podcasts are great if you have missed a show or just want to have fun.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Closing music is Hummingbird, performed by The Weepies.